Hello everyone! As I'm sure many of you know by now, EuroLive will be live again quite soon. We have a special report on it later in the podcast, as well as a DRC history report for those of you who joined us after Prolo closed back in 2004. In addition, we have a new music, another GOTC episode, and more. EuroLive lives! These are the words on the lips of fans all around the world. Not too long ago, Cyan Worlds announced the return of Live, exciting Euro fans everywhere. The new Euro online game will be hosted by GameTap, both as a part of a packet of games offered and separately. A new web page for EuroLive is already online at www.eurolive.com, where you can read news, sign up for the Cyan newsletter and EuroLive beta testing, and take a questionnaire. Other things offered on the page include a listing of in-development ideas and a link to the new EuroLive forums, which are growing daily. When the beta testing was first announced, so many explorers rushed over to sign up that the page was crashed for many hours. Explorers everywhere are waiting hopefully for emails telling them of the acceptance into the beta testing, and the opening of Live scheduled for later this year is eagerly awaited. On the 24th of May, Uru fans pooled their resources and supplied the team at Cyan with a truckload of pizzas, initiating a pizza party. At the party, the Cyan Worlds team was presented with a magnificent plaque from fans worldwide, made and donated by Cher as a tribute to Cyan for the announcement of the return of Uru Live. The commemoration plaque includes the Cyan logo and a picture of the Cyan Worlds headquarters. Even after all the pizza, there were funds left over, and they were donated to a new donut fund for Cyan. Pictures and a shortwave video are available on the Cavern Today website. The pizza party at Cyan inspired a Cavern-wide party down in Nice as well. There was dancing in the streets all over Agora, cocktail parties in the gallery, even reports of a rave in Cadish. So many explorers were linking into the cavern, in fact, that temperatures rose while everyone partied away. The effects can still be felt down here today. In other news, the Grade Zero has recently been recalibrated so that the key positioning system now works once an explorer has completed all 14 marker quests. There has also been a key upgrade allowing for the creation of customized marker games once an explorer has completed the red and green missions. The Nexus now displays coordinates for all the linking spots in the city. There has also been reports of a new Barrowstone appearing in Edakimo, linking explorer to the classroom rooftop in the neighborhoods. This means no more risky jumping from the balcony above your neighborhood in order to get that elusive marker to complete your marker quest.
City Traffic Report. Welcome to the Agora Traffic Report. Today we have overcrowding in the city and many reports of lag. Explorers are linking in and hanging around to chat, clogging up the ferry terminal in Turkata courtyard, and polluting key chat logs with their incessant chatter. At the Grade Zero, things are even worse.
This is an emergency announcement of a Fridney Underground. We have just discovered that EuroLive will be returning this holiday season. Steve Cross from TCT was quoting saying, "Yes, oh yes, this is so cool, I knew this would happen, yes, oh yes." The announcement came with the opening of the EuroLive forums, which have struck immediate controversy in the community, as many feel the private shards will be abandoned. Jikla has been reported in the cavern saying, "My precious, nothing will happen to you, my precious shards." He has also been caught shouting, "Slackers, rock, sirs, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1 and 1, at random explorers, causing deep debate over what he means. Some in the cavern have suggested it's a new rude slang word. Others believe it might have something to do with the independent shards. Unfortunately, Jikla was not around to comment, being as he was clutching his Railto book while trying to link, causing him to be trapped in link until he let the book go. It could be some time. I'm getting something over the cans. Dalkan has something to report from Xian headquarters.
Thanks, Zam. I managed to sneak into Cyan and made my way to Rand's office. I tried asking him about Uru Live and the Nuru, but all he would do is stare at a plaque on his wall saying that was awesome, over and over. Someone tipped me off that it might have something to do with Cher.
Thank you, Dalkan. I'm receiving news that Steve Crops is running up to explorers in the cavern screaming LIVE at them and running away. More on that at 10.
Kicking cones about, placing markers in haphazard patterns, and just generally goofing off. This ends our traffic report. Good night.
And now I think it is time we move into the rest of the podcast and hear all those lovely reports.
Cavern Communication Network's field correspondent, bringing you an update about some of the construction noise you may be hearing at CCN. Those of you who have been a little concerned I might not get back from my Bevan's cruise in time for Uru Live, well, I'm glad to say I'm back and fit as a fiddle, or at least as fit as I will ever be. I take a run through the cavern almost every morning, and it seems I never lose any weight. Anyway, I'm fine and working along with the CCN website staff to bring about some changes at our network, including the addition of a brand new offering that I'll be talking about in a few moments. But first, some news about the Cavern Players. You may not know it, but the Cavern Today podcast is only one of the many ways we bring entertainment and news to the Cavern community. Early last winter, we formed a troupe of actors, producers, and scriptwriters. We started calling ourselves the Cavern Players. Our first production was the Cavern Christmas Carol, and our second production is coming out now as a serial, Alice in Wonderland. You can catch the streaming video at Cavern Communication Network's streaming theater or through RSS feed. In most cases, the productions are recorded and then filmed live in the cavern by our CCN filmmaker Vera Loon, who comes to the cavern by way of Holland on a regular basis to do his work. I think just about everyone on the CCN team acted in or participated in both productions, and a few explorers from the community who don't usually work with CCN but wanted to be a part of these projects came along for the ride. In the future, we plan to offer live in-cavern plays. Our first planned live event is Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, slated for an early fall release around the time of our first air anniversary. And we are planning another film, a send-up comedy, King Shroom, to air next winter or about the time that Uru Live launches. Now, about that other offering. No, it isn't the shortwave. Our news feed service and the place where you can still find the Water Cooler Show with host Tyon. This month, the news is about Lakewater Group. Lakewater Group was created so that independent projects, not necessarily Cavern Today or Cavern Player Productions, could be aired and distributed. In the near future, these productions will include a completely independent video illustration being organized and completed by another group of talented Uru storytellers and graphic artists. All Lakewater will have to do is help these folks get it out to the public. Another project coming up is a dramatic interpretation of the Book of Atris written by shortwave news anchor Elhan. Elhan is planning the casting for his production now. I believe he said the casting call is open, but Elhan can tell you for himself.
Thanks a lot, Ruby. Yes, I have begun work on an audio drama adaptation of Myst, the Book of Atris, which was written by Rand and Robin Miller and ghostwritten by David Wingrove. Now, I'm putting out an open casting call for anybody who would be interested in playing in this. If you've read the book, then probably any character who has a speaking role in that book will probably be in this audio drama. Obviously, that doesn't leave any room for Regis, Gen's mute servant, unfortunately, so he'll probably not be in it. But, hey, you do what you can with the medium you're given. So, if anybody is interested in auditioning for this, please send an email to eocooldude@hotmail.com or to darthtrogdor@gmail.com. I will get in touch with you right away, and we'll figure out what we're doing from there. We're still in the planning stages, and I've got some of the earliest some of the scripts for the first couple of episodes written. So, Ruby, do you have some more info for us?
Thank you, Elhan. In addition to Elhan's dramatic interpretation project, a brand new show will launch this fall on Uru Community TV. Now, Uru Community TV is actually a series of comedy programs. The working title for this first program is Elti's Show. This show will be hosted by Elti Warber. This program is expected to be a light-hearted look at where, why, and who in the cavern. A little newsy, a little about cavern decorating and cooking in the cavern, a lot about guest and entertainment. This is going to be fun. And if you're looking for something a little more serious and studious, then you might want to bookmark Galen's Dunny Audio History Project. This documentary-style serial will credit much of what's already been made available to cavern explorers and will shed more light on a popular subject that makes going on an expedition to uncover artifacts much more interesting. Bring along a yellow pad, or better yet, a three-ring notebook. So you see, Lakewater is already working to bring independent productions to air. And when I say air, I mean by stream, feed, or download, audio or video, or audio and video. For the last year, the Cavern Communications Network team has been sharing and developing ways of bringing multimedia to the Uru community. And now we plan to share some of that information with groups who want to work independently but need a place to showcase their ambitious projects. Even if you're not a Uru community explorer, you are welcome to stop by. We are interested in your machinima, radio broadcast, and videos. No doubt, we'll try to encourage you to join the Uru expedition, but it will be a soft sale. No hard sale is ever required to convince you to take this journey. This is Ruby Odegi, signing off.
Hello, everyone. This is Anthony. I'm here to tell you about a project Moete has started in the Mist Obsession forums. She is looking to create a Damala yearbook. If you have been on Damala for a day, or if you've been on Damala for a year, feel free to send a picture of your abbey to Moete. If you can't take your photo, or are unsure how to do it, then there are usually people in the Uru Obsession neighborhood willing to lend a hand and take your photo.
Hello again, this is Molog for The Cavern Today. Much has been said about how the Myst series set the benchmark for what an adventure game should be. Years ago, anytime you read a review of a new adventure title, there was always the inevitable comparison to the Myst series, and it usually ran along the lines of, it's a good game, but it's no Myst. So the Cyan titles were regularly recognized for their excellence. One of the outstanding qualities of Myst and subsequent titles has always been the story behind the scenes. Various other games have attempted to expand their themes into some sort of story, usually manifesting themselves as action movies or similar, but typical of the more thoughtful, intellectual nature of Myst, the backstory was most effectively presented outside of the games themselves, in the form of three rather good novels. The games were more than merely games, of course. They were vehicles intended to draw us into that story, and to make us part of it, to make it part of its solution. And the success of that approach has resulted in a closely knit, worldwide community of fans who are deeply devoted to the work of Cyan Worlds. Well, the story behind Myst, essentially the story of the once mighty but now fallen Dani civilization and the people who are seeking to restore it, has come to us from several sources, and at the center of this movement is one of the chief authorities on the Dani today, Richard A. Watson, and Rawa, as he is known to many, has been with Cyan World since the early days. At this time, it's my distinct privilege to welcome Richard to the cavern today. Rawa, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I must admit that this is our second attempt at this interview. I'll say that to the fans. The technology kind of played a little practical joke on us the first time, so at least we had a good rehearsal. So anyway, down to business. One of the first things I thought about when considering questions for this interview was the original source of our information on the Denny, the first Myst game itself. Richard, can you tell us a little bit about how much research into the Denny had already been done by that time? And can you describe some of the sources you used to provide the framework for the story that we first saw in Myst?
Sure. The story of Myst and Riven and those first three novels were primarily based on journals that Catherine left behind in Denis.
Mm-hmm. I know we've found some of her journals ourselves, and I've read through some of her entries and realized that she was a very thorough journalist, obviously, because the richness of the story is really, it's really quite astonishing. And with the discovery of more journals, the story simply becomes richer, and it's just a real treat to get more deeply into them. As the games progressed, it became obvious to us, to we fans, that we were seeing more and more of the story as it was being unearthed. Can you describe the process by which your knowledge of the Denis grew during the post-Myst period, and perhaps explain some of the work behind the other games like Riven and Exile and Revelation, and the novels as well?
Well, the main points of the Myst and Riven and the novels were pretty well known by the time Myst came out. Mm-hmm. Exile and Revelation and Myst 5 were not known, and those kind of developed separately.
Understood. Well, on a related note, speaking of the novels again, we've read your explanation in the forums about the discrepancy, for example, between the location of the cavern in the book and in real life, and you've always been very good about explaining some of those discrepancies, because leave it to we fans to pick at any little thing we can find and saying, you know, this doesn't agree with this. You know, what do you have to say about that? And you've always been very good about actually finding those details and filling us in. Could you expand on that a little, perhaps explain about the extent of the Denis knowledge at the time the books were written as opposed to what we know now?
Most of the differences were, well, especially in the novels, were creative differences between Rand and Robin and some that I worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And either the publisher or David Wingrove.
Sure.
And I know specifically the location of the cavern was one where that we wanted left nondescript.
Sure.
For various reasons. And he wanted to nail it down to a specific location.
Mm-hmm.
And we got him to not name a specific location, but there were enough clues to his location that people could see where he wanted to put it.
Understood, because I understand that it was pretty essential to the DRC at that stage that the location not get out. And so that's why, for example, it's kind of difficult to find Tajinar on a map of New Mexico.
Yeah.
Although some of us have looked, you know. Not a whole lot of camels out there.
Yeah, the DRC was kind of not interested in having anybody know where they were at that point.
Sure, sure. Can you tell us about some of the prominent kings in Denis's past? I know we've had some fans ask about this, how the kings were significant to the history of the Denis, how they steered the civilization. I think what prompted the question was we've read so much about the kings now in the journals in the palace in our Path of the Shell segment of the adventure. And could you please, you know, tell us a little bit about the kings and how they eventually segued into the guild system and perhaps why they did that?
Yeah, I'm really rusty on the specific details of the kings, but the segue into the guilds I know was with King Carath.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided,
the Arch,
yes, they renamed the Arch. The Arch wasn't originally called the Arch of Carath, but...
See, I didn't know that. I thought that he saw to the construction of it, or at least it was built to commemorate him. Didn't realize it was already there.
The Arch was actually very early on, long before he lived, and they renamed it for him after he stepped down.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And living near St. Louis as I do, there's this huge arch on our riverfront, and I can't help but draw a parallel, but go ahead, I'm sorry.
I don't remember where we were.
Okay. When the king system of the monarchy segued into the guild system.
Oh, yes. He kind of disbanded the monarchy and set up more of a democracy kind of thing, mm-hmm. with the, although it's not really a democracy either, but it was just a more representative government than the monarchy was.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did the guild system actually fit into their civilization? It seemed to encompass most of the major trades, as well as the Guild of Writers, I think was preeminent because the writing was so much at the heart of the Dunny civilization and set them apart from any other people.
Yeah, the guild system is interesting to me anyway because it's so flexible.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the 18 major guilds that we know aren't necessarily the ones that always were the major guilds.
Mm-hmm.
As the situation changed, their priorities changed, and different guilds would take prominence.
Mm-hmm.
We see example of that in Riven, where Gen picks the five guilds that he wants for Riven, and they aren't the same as necessarily as the guilds that the Dunny had.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, let me skip a little bit. Our next question is kind of multifaceted, actually, and I probably should have written this as two or three questions, but they all seem to be related, so answer it all at once, or we'll break it down or whatever. One of the more mysterious pieces of the Dunny puzzle would have to be the Barrow. We came across that term first in the Book of Dunny, and it was used as a reference to the human slave caste on Tirani, and then our adventures in Myst V, well, in Uru for that matter, and then in Myst V, it put the term in a whole different light with the strange, unearthly creatures known as the Barrow. It was very difficult to understand exactly what role they played with the Dunny. Well, it was kind of difficult to understand Yeesha's burden, I think, and what the significance of the tablet was and of the Barrow's freedom as it related to the Dunny. Can you fill us in a little on that? I know a lot of folks ended Myst V with a lot more questions, I think, than when they started.
That's the way we like it.
Well, yeah. leaves you wide open for a sequel. And we don't mind that, by the way. Yeah,
that's right.
The more the merrier.
Yeah, I think the nature of the Barrow when Dunny was alive and thriving and what their relationship was, we really don't know.
Yeah.
And what the significance of their freedom is, we really don't know what they're going to do with that either.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were never really mentioned in any of the Dunny journals we came across at all. And
no, they weren't.
And so they were as invisible to the Dunny, perhaps, as the slaves on Tirani were. Perhaps it was a relationship there kind of similar, that they were just not seen because the Dunny refused to see them. I don't know.
That could be.
But there was definitely a relationship, and I hope we get to understand that better, because it was an intriguing part of the story. They were fascinating creatures, and hopefully there will be more to that story.
Yeah, I think we'll be learning more about them as time goes on.
Yeah. Well, I realize that at the time, or at the moment, things are kind of hush-hush as for what we'll see coming up this fall. But relative to the Dunny story, can you tell us anything about what we may come across later this year on the return of Live? We left off, for example, with Uru, the restoration process under the DRC, having to close down for lack of funding, and we were able to, return to the cavern on a limited basis, and now the DRC are coming back. How will the new story tie in to the story that we left behind?
Well, this new story will just pick up right where it is.
I guess we'll come across new age books and things,
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find new things, and
I may be getting too specific. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Like a lot of other folks, we're kind of on pins and needles anticipating what's going to come. So, yeah. Well, I can't really think of anything else. Do you have anything you'd like to add for the fans before we close this one off and see if it recorded?
I just want to thank them for everything they've done over the past 2 years, especially. We're really excited to be able to pick Live up again.
Yeah, I think that we were as elated to see Rand's recent announcement as we were anguished to see the one of 2 years ago. I just wish the best for you guys. And in that light, with Mysterium coming up, I know a few of us are going. Well, actually quite a crowd, as it turns out, is coming to Mysterium this year. I'll be there myself. I hope to meet some of you guys personally for the first time. It'll be my first chance to meet some of my cohorts from here at the Cavern today, and we're looking to that in a huge way. looking forward to that, I should say, in a really big way. So it's been a treat, Richard. We hope to see you soon. And for
Thank you.
Cavern today, yeah. For the Cavern today, this is Mowag signing off.
Wow. Thank you for coming on the show, Rala. Hopefully we will see you more often and learn more about the Dinny past. Now, Galen has a piece for us.
Hello, and welcome to the Dinny History Project. My name is Galen Delore, and I am pleased to bring you a new documentary series on the history and culture of a race of people known as the Dinny. I am delighted that you have chosen to join me on this journey into the past, where we will explore once thriving cities and the remarkable society that inhabited them. Deep beneath my feet is a massive underground cavern, and within that cavern, the Dinny lived for thousands of years. Now they are gone, and little remains except the ruins of monumental structures and clues to the magnificence of what was. Over the next several months, I will talk to you about this ancient civilization and walk with you through the underground city and surrounding areas the Dinny built beneath this desert. To my right is a fissure in the ground, and within that, a tiny cave entrance now known as the Cleft. It leads to an underground tunnel system that extends in the direction of this large volcano behind me. From the tunnel, we make our way into the cavern that lay undisturbed until only two decades ago. In fact, in 2007, exploration of the city and its cave entrance enters only into its 20th year. Throughout this series, you will learn more about the Dinny race, their rise and fall, kings, guilds, and the mysterious art that allowed them to travel to different worlds, including this one. Among many other subjects, you will hear of the discovery of the Cleft, about the archaeological expeditions, the Dinny Restoration Council, the Great Tree, Yisha, the Call, and about Elias Zandi and his dreams for the new Dinny. I myself am called an explorer, and I am part of a community of people from all over the surface of this world who have, according to legend, answered the call. All explorers travel to the desert and through this cleft into what is appropriately called the cavern. Before we journey into the distant past, however, I would like to mention one important series of events in recent history. In May of 2006, a particularly exciting event took place for both the Dinny Restoration Council and for explorers. The DRC, as the group is called, announced that their restoration work would once more begin. If you have not yet visited the cavern's archaeological site, it will be difficult for you to understand the enormous significance of this announcement. You see, earlier in February of 2004, funding was withdrawn from restoration efforts, and a dismayed council was forced to disband and leave their unfinished work behind them. Explorers, who had just begun to collectively examine the ruins, were heartbroken to hear they would no longer be able to return together to the city. Information from the Dinny historian, Dr. Watson, ceased as well, and the flow of ideas about the Dinny was in danger of disappearing entirely. Fortunately, some months later, the DRC gave explorers a few Dinny tools, and these enabled them to gather once again in previously opened areas. Between 2004 and 2006, hundreds, if not thousands, of explorers continued to visit the cavern. Saddened that no more new areas could be opened, but determined to do what they could to keep the memory of its existence alive. They continued to study the Dinny ruins and learn as much as they could about its ancient people. Although they had few artifacts and manuscripts to work with, and they could not look more closely at some of the important ruins. Nevertheless, they collected what information they could and added their work to the DRC information centers accessible in the cavern and on the surface. These combined resources are invaluable, and throughout each program I will point you to places where you can find more information about the Dinny. We will also talk with explorers we meet as we tour the cavern. At the time of this recording, the DRC had begun regular communications with them again, and I will try to include that information as it becomes relevant to the subject at hand. Although Dr. Watson himself has not resumed addressing questions on Dinny history, answers to the most pressing questions do seem to find their way to us through DRC activity on the surface. We may even meet a busy member of the DRC as their path to new areas and our path to old ones cross each other in the cavern. And now, it's time for our journey to begin. We begin our journey here at the library. This massive square structure behind me was called the Denis Common Library and is located on the island city of Igera. From where I stand, large steps lead upward and downward to the two major entrances. Above, the roof sweeps outward on all sides as if sending out waves of information, just as the light does over the doors. This library, like any, was one place where you would find Denis books. But these weren't just informational books, they were also something more. Inside the books are pictures, which in themselves is not unusual. But what is unusual is the effect on the viewer when the viewer touches the picture. Special properties in the ink and paper allow the pictures to do more than just show us what the location looks like. It becomes also a portal, and by touching it we can travel from one physical place to another. This particular type of book is called a linking book, and this one will take you to a place called Garizan. You might think of a linking book like a sort of travel book. Choose the place you want to go, open that book to the picture, press your hand on the picture, and go there. Many, many such books were once housed in this library behind me. Some would take you to places not even in the cavern. One of the most interesting things about these books is that the same book could be used to transport several people all at once. The reason this worked is because even though you might leave, the book itself stays behind. The Denis used their library resources very efficiently that way. Another reason we have begun our journey here at the library is because the Denis people specialized in writing. Not just novel writing or letter writing or writing poetry or music, but in the art of writing, with a capital A. The art of writing was a central theme throughout Denis history, and its secrets were most carefully guarded. Techniques were passed on only to the most promising and talented individuals, and it took many years to learn the art well enough to perform its true function. It was so important, in fact, that the Writers' Guild Hall was the first one completed here on Igera, because without this art, the Denis would not have been able to travel here at all. You see, in the Denis culture, the art of writing is creative. Well, of course, you say, all writing is creative. Yes, but while most of us write to create worlds for our imaginations, the Denis art creates real ones. As many explorers know, the spaces in which the Denis would live were first created or opened through the act of writing. These spaces were called ages, and into them a group of Denis would arrive to build homes, cities, or neighborhoods in which they could live out their lives. And it was through this art that they arrived here. Each new age was first created by writing a large, detailed description of what the author wanted that age to be. This book was called a descriptive book, and as its name implies, described the age. It was written in a special Denis language, one different from the commonly spoken language. Each word and phrase had to be carefully chosen, and paragraphs were laid out just as carefully. Everything had to be right. Even the paper and ink used in writing these books were special. All these elements, the writing, the paper, the ink, were under the jurisdiction of specialized guilds, and all aspects of production were carefully controlled. Now you won't find descriptive books inside this library. In the common library, you would only find linking books. Descriptive books had to be carefully preserved, as any changes to the writing would affect the entire age described, and those were kept in the Guild Hall library on the other side of this island. I can't show you that library, because access to it has been blocked by the barricades of the DRC. Another reason why our journey begins here at the Common Library. But that's not to say linking books were unimportant, because they were. You can't get anywhere unless you have either a descriptive book or a linking book. The difference is that linking books only link to one specific place in an age. They don't create the age itself. If this is confusing, you're not alone. Think of it this way. Once the age is written, you have to use this new descriptive book to get to the new age for the first time. The age is not actually created until you first arrive there through the descriptive book. Hopefully you did your work well and are happy with where you end up. If you are satisfied with your new age and the Denny universe, you need to walk around to choose a place that everyone else can come to when they link. Then you have to write another book, a smaller one, that describes the place where you are standing. This smaller book is the one that sits in this common library and takes everyone else to your new site. There was much more to it than this, of course, but suffice it to say that the descriptive books are different from linking books in that you don't know exactly where you will arrive when you first link through the descriptive book. You always know where you will arrive when you link through a linking book. Unless that book becomes damaged, of course, which is a different story altogether. It's almost as if the descriptive book has to interpret what you wrote and choose where it will initially take you. Linking books don't have a choice. They just lay here on these pedestals and send one person after another to that same spot on the new age. So now you might have a better idea why the descriptive books couldn't be written or edited by just anyone. And one more thing. Before you make that first trip to your new age, be sure to take a linking book from the current age with you. Otherwise, you might find yourself stranded on your newly created bit of rock. Now, you won't find any linking books here in the library. Well, not right away, anyway. The only books here now are three journals left by the DRC. But there were books here, and they might have been more than just linking books. The journals left here are translations from books that were somewhere, and are now somewhere else. But the translated books were not linking books. They were chronicles of some kind. Of course, the information in the journals here is also interesting, to be sure, and we'll talk about what is in them at a later time. If you're too curious to wait, however, feel free to read them. This is an open area of the city, so you can come and look at the DRC journals yourself. Well, we're out of time for this segment. In our next, we'll dig deeper into the mysterious art of writing, talk more about the writing guilds, and learn what happens when a linking book is damaged. The information for this segment has been found in journals like the ones you see here, left in various places in the cavern by the DRC. If you can find them, you can read those for yourself as well. On the surface, you can find a great deal of information at the following centers: www.cyan.com, www.drcsite.org, www.DPWR.net, www.DNIDESK.com. For information specific to Denis Library Practices, go to www.VOFD.org. Additional resources are also listed at these locations. I would like to thank you again for joining me on this part of the program. Until next time, this is Galen Delore, and I wish you a safe and pleasant journey.
Delanor has allowed us to play one of his great pieces this month. This is Silo.
Hello, everyone. This is Dalkin Starbine here, reporting from Agura. Not much has happened in the last few weeks in the cavern. The Adder Chemostone has appeared once again. However, the DRC have remained strangely hidden in the last few weeks. Several scientists met with the DRC liaisons and discussed their new game, Uru Live. It is supposed to be based on the cavern and trying to tell the story of what's going on here. I'm sure many of us know about Uru. A game which told the journey we took. However, it led to an MMOG. From what we have heard from the town halls, Cyan has a list of beta testers ready. Unfortunately, despite questioning every explorer I could, I was unable to find anyone in the cavern who was testing the game. With Cyan's NDA, it's unlikely we will get to find out. The new site for this game is up and running by scientist Grey Dragon, and I'm sure everyone here wants to sign up just to check out how accurate Cyan has been to cavern life. And I know a few people are interested to see if Cyan remembers the Dunnies this time. I have reports that the Great Zero has been partially fixed. Many explorers who complete the marker quests are starting to get reasonably accurate positioning information from it. However, the temporary fix Laxman has instigated did cause some major disruptions for many, with the Nexus seeming to completely break down. Many in the cavern were calling for the Nexus database to be wiped, believing it would help the system. However, it seems some adventurous explorers, with the help of the DRC, have managed to resolve the Nexus issues. I'm linking to Chemo now to see if I can catch the last of these GZ markers. This is Dalkin Starbine, signing off.
Hello again, this is Mowag for the Cavern Today. In this, the last of our three-part exploration of the games that Cyan created before Myst, we'll be talking about Spelunks and the Caves of Mr. Sudo, which first appeared in 1991, published by Broderbund Software. Spelunks was the third and final title released by Cyan before Myst. You may recall that in earlier installments we discussed The Manhole and Cosmic Osmo. Spelunks was similar to both of those games, in that it was a simple hypercard-based point-and-click adventure aimed primarily at children. It was similar also in that it appeared originally in black and white, but interestingly, it contained elements of spot color that looked a bit peculiar against the 1-bit scenery, but this was again because of the color limitations in hypercard. Later, just as with The Manhole and Osmo, an enhanced version of Spelunks appeared, and this new version was beautifully recreated in full color by Joshua Staub. Seriously, the colors in the later version of Spelunks are just gorgeous, even if there are only 256 of them. One of the main criticisms of Spelunks when it first appeared was that the game seemed very short, with only a few activities. And as true as this may be, it leads to one of the most interesting aspects of Spelunks, interesting to Uru fans at least. Spelunks, as its full title implies, was set in a little cave system. So, for starters, you have the cave idea that we later found in Uru. The game opens with an elevator ride. And once the elevator reached the tunnels below, you could follow those tunnels to any of three rooms, each room containing a different group of activities. Yes, there were only three rooms, but Cyan's original intent, and here's the Uru connection, was to follow up that initial release by periodically creating new chambers that Spelunks fans could add to the game in the future. Not only could you rearrange the initial three rooms in Spelunks via the use of a machine called the Spelunks Builder, the caves were designed to be expandable. It's fascinating to see how Spelunks presaged Uru Live in that regard, with its concept of continually updated content. In the case of Spelunks, it was never made clear how those new rooms were to be delivered. The internet was in its infancy at the time, so downloads would seem remote. Perhaps Cyan envisioned purchasing the new content via mail order or off the shelf. But alas, the original three rooms were all we ever saw of Spelunks. I wish I'd thought to ask Josh Staub about this in more detail during our interview, because the idea of Spelunks really was quite intriguing. As for the activities themselves, they differed from the previous two games by being mostly educational in nature. Spelunks offered playful lessons in science, biology, physics, astronomy, geometry. Well, let me just tell you about some of the games. One of my favorite spots in Spelunks was the lizard. One of the rooms contained a terrarium, and that terrarium was home to a small lizard that you could feed from a pile of food pellets alongside the tank. There was also a temperature control, and it didn't take too long to learn that warming the tank increased the lizard's metabolism and made him more active. With each pellet, he grew fatter and greener until he refused the final pellet, which was then gobbled by a worm that popped out of the sand at the bottom of the tank. There were also two activities that illustrated the speed of sound. In the one, you stood on a balcony in a deep cavern chamber and dropped a pebble into the water far below. A graph at the handrail would time the drop, showing how the pebble accelerated as it fell, and then it would time the delay before you heard the sound. In the other puzzle, you could enter a distance in miles or kilometers, and then look into a view scope to see a lightning flash at the specified distance, with a timer then counting the seconds until the sound of thunder arrived. In another activity, you could charge a fluorescent lamp with different gases, and then power it up to note the different colors. Climbing a ladder to an opening, you could use a telescope to view the wonders of the heavens, locating those features through the use of Cartesian coordinates on a panel alongside the scope. In another hint of what was to come in the Myst games, Spelunks was the first of the Cyan titles to present a backstory to the adventure, this time by means of a storybook in Professor Spelunks' office. The story was a delightful children's fantasy that I always enjoyed reading to our son when he was little. In the book, we learn of Professor Spelunks, a kindly scientist who just happens to be a very dignified teddy bear. He befriends the diminutive Mr. Pseudo, a little fellow with a long snout a bit like an anteater, and the story involves the assignment given to Mr. Pseudo by the professor, the creation of a very special toaster, designed specifically for the final contest in the upcoming Great Games, the game of Yodel Toasters. And by the way, there was a miniature version of Yodel Toasters provided in Spelunks as a game within the game. Not to digress too far, but the game involved ejecting a slice of toast from a toaster, and then sliding the toaster back and forth to catch and reshoot the toast, aiming for a little mountain climber above, dressed in lederhosen. And when he caught the toast, he'd yodel with delight, and you scored points according to the number of tosses. The tricky bit was that you only got so many attempts before the toast became overdone and crumbled to cinders. As mentioned, there were several other activities, and while most of them dealt with science, there were some that were just plain fun, such as the picture over Mr. Pseudo's desk. Clicking that picture zoomed you in on an interactive scene where you could place a miniature Mr. Pseudo anywhere in the picture, explore his house, etc., even sit him at his piano and hear him play. Brief as it was, Spelunks was simply delightful. Cyan chose to commemorate the game in a small way via the spiral notebooks we found in the cavern and ages of Uru. You may recall that each of those notebooks bore the brand name Pseudo. As I've mentioned before, each of these games, The Manhole, Cosmic Osmo, and Spelunks, was great fun on its own. But when seen in light of what was to come later from Cyan, they become all the more fascinating. Because these games serve to document the growth of Cyan's world-building abilities. When I initially played Myst, I couldn't help but keep in mind that it had been preceded by these other three. Myst became a fascinating blend of the magical exploration of the earlier titles, coupled with a very serious storyline that made it plain that I was in another type of adventure altogether, even if the rocket ship on Myst Island was rather reminiscent of the Osmobile. So thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the story behind Spelunks, as related in the storybook and the game, I've also recorded a reading of that book, which you can access via our website at www.thecaverntoday.com. Look in the Podcast 13 section. I hope you've enjoyed these retrospectives as much as I've enjoyed putting them together. For The Cavern Today, this is Mowag signing off.
The third reflection, the third seal, the third journey, that shall help reveal the hidden past, for the time of a journey of burdens approaches like a coming wave. But the questions continue to grow. Will the three make the true choices? Will the three be able to carry the burdens? Will all return, or will all fade? These are the questions that must be answered.
A world that stands still. A world with no sound. A world that has been long forgotten. This is the world I was linked into. It was a world that did not look decayed or very wondrous. It was a world that was somewhere in between. As I stepped onto that hard rock path that ran through a field of pale green grass, I felt the cold air as it blew against my face. And when I reached the top, I saw the city that now lay still. There was only the sound of the wind. It was like walking through a frozen moment in time, which was a strange feeling, but that is to be expected. As I went deeper and deeper into the city, I saw that there were 5 paths, and I knew I had to choose. But then, for some reason, I felt I should take the middle path. I don't know why I felt this pull, but I did, so I proceeded down that path. At the end of this path lay a single temple resembling a large stone block. As I gazed at it, I saw something that made me fall to the ground, a very quick flash of 2 versions of the temple. The first was a shimmering wonder, and the other was the temple in a decayed state. When I regained my whereabouts, I stood back up and proceeded to enter the temple. What was that? In the second room lay a single pedestal with a device that looked very similar to the key device you get in Garrison. I placed it where my normal key would be, for to travel this road, you must leave behind the things that connect you to Dunny. Alongside the device was a crystal of some kind which fit into the top of the device, but I couldn't figure out the purpose of the crystal. I decided to figure that out later, and proceeded into the next room, then the one after that. Each was more amazing than the one before. There were symbols of an unknown race, and for some reason, I could read it. I don't know how, but I could. There were stories of kings and people and legends and histories. It was amazing, and I learned much just in that one room. I came to one room that had a symbol hanging above it and bearing some text, and like in the other rooms, I could read the text and this symbol. The symbol read, "The Burden of Friendship," and the small text read as follows. "The blue light, the blue seal, the power to hold and reveal. This is the third burden. If you take it, you will not be able to release it until the time of freedom. This is the way of things, H. Journeyer." I somehow felt that I should take this burden, and so I decided I would, and then I proceeded on to the next chamber. I finally reached a strange room that I think was a throne room. There was one large chair and 2 smaller chairs, and then on the ground in front of the 3 chairs were 3 symbols. I then saw that I could only read one of the 3 symbols, which was strange. The symbol I could read was the symbol for friendship.
Ken suddenly saw something very strange. There were strange waves of energy in this room. They were as white as light, and they moved around as if they were waves. Ken couldn't help but stand in awe at them, and when they hit him, they felt very warm. Ken found this pleasant because it was a bit chilly inside the temple.
Such wondrous waves of light flowed around me, and once in a while hit me. It was as if I was in a dream of some kind. They were the most amazing things. They seemed to re-energize your strength and make you feel warm all over. These beams of light reflected from one place to another, and then they suddenly vanished and all was as it had been before. At this point, I knew that this was not a Dunny Age, for in all my travels, I had never seen such a thing. I took one final look in this room, and then saw something that I should have seen the moment I first walked in. It was a door of some kind with a keyhole that looked just like my crystal. But could it truly be that easy to just slip it in? I didn't expect it to be so easy. I stepped up to the door, placed my crystal into the slot, and sure enough, to my surprise, it opened. What I saw was rather strange. It was the same room, but it looked like two overlapping scenes. And as I gazed into it, I saw something even stranger. What I saw was two other people in this overlapping reflection. It was so distorted, though. You couldn't really see their faces, but you could see that they were of Dunny, and that they stood on the other two symbols in front of the three chairs. But who were these people? Were they truly from Dunny? Or was this an illusion of some kind? Suddenly, I saw the door start to close, and I moved out of the way. So what was I supposed to do now? So far, I had seen a strange reflection of two versions of the same age, and then I found a key-like device that opened a door and revealed overlapping reflections of the other two worlds. What did it all mean? There had to be a reason. Then it hit me. What if this age wasn't just a normal age? What if it was an age that was in three different time frames? One would be the past, another the present, the third the future. But which was which? I thought about it, and figured that the shimmering version was the past. The version I was in was the present, and the decayed version must be the future. And if this was actually so, that would mean that there are two other journeyers of Dunny in two different time frames. But how would I communicate with them? Should I enter that strange overlapping place? Would that be the key? I decided to try this, knowing that I might end up in some void, or possibly worse. But I figured, why not? I mean, we jumped into the Starfisher, what could be worse? I proceeded to the door and opened it. There again, I saw the two journeyers and the two overlapping versions of the age. But when I tried to step into them, I found I couldn't. And then suddenly, I was blown back and the door slammed shut. Well, that was interesting. So, now what? How could I communicate with these guys? My first try ended up with me lying on the floor. I thought and thought, and then I got an idea. Why not stand on that symbol they were standing on? They were standing on the other two, so it could be possible that if I did that, I could be transported to where they were, or at least be able to communicate with them. So I walked onto the symbol, and sure enough, suddenly it glowed a bright blue color, and once again, I saw the strange light waves, and felt myself falling. And then I felt a strange warping tingle, unlike a link. This felt a lot faster. I fell and warped and fell and warped, and then suddenly I found myself standing on that symbol.
The Room of Reflection, a place that is different from any place in this age. This age is not a normal age, as has been said before. It is an age of reflections, an age of history, an age of time. But what lies within this age? What was left behind? Will we ever learn what lies on the other paths? Or will we simply taste but a drop of what truly lies hidden? If we are the ones meant to carry the burdens, then we must learn. And to learn is to grow, and to grow is to learn. This is the way of things, the way of the age journeyer, the way of life, and the way things will always be. But as I have said before, will we take the wisdom and knowledge we gain these teachings? Or will we simply ignore it and never grow?
A stranger, another journeyer of Dunny. He is another who follows the teachings of the grower. In his eyes lies courage, in his heart lies wisdom. In his face lies a burden, for this I can see. But behind him he hides something that can only be known by those he could trust. That he is young, and yet in his heart he is much older. We stand on the symbols of the past, but there is one symbol that remains vacant. No journeyer stands there. I have met another journeyer, another friend, yet I feel this incomplete gathering. But then I feel that the time of the last journeyer's arrival grows closer. How can I sense such things? Could it be simply intuition? Or is it something stronger? I am a journeyer of ages, a learner of lessons, a woman of wisdom. He is a man of courage. We carry two burdens. as we both have learned from our talk. He carries the burden of courage, and I carry the burden of wisdom. Now both of us yearn to know, who is the one who carries the third burden, and for that matter, what is the third burden?
She is a woman of wisdom. In her heart lives wisdom and love. In her eyes lies courage. In her face lies a burden. But why should these things truly be burdens? Because they are. These are good burdens, and we should always carry them. For they are like feathers, but also like bricks. For sometimes to do what you know is right is the hardest part of carrying these burdens.
While all this has been said, all this has been done. Tyan and Len's greeting and words took place while the third Jonaya was nearing the place where they weighed. The three would now meet.
The two worlds were now three, for when I opened my eyes, I could see all three instances of the age, but only for a split second. All combined into one, and then suddenly it all cleared, and I saw the other two journeyers who carried the other two burdens.
As the third Jonaya appeared, Tyan and Len suddenly felt time slow down. They too saw the strange light waves that the third Jonaya had seen but a few minutes before.
Such wondrous light, such a warm feeling. These waves of light, I remember reading about them in the room before this chamber. According to legend, they hold the power to protect those of light, and the power to destroy those of shadow. It was a wondrous feeling when they hit me. I felt as if I was re-energized, and I also felt as warm as you would feel in front of a fire.
The power of light is such a wondrous thing. In story after story, you hear that the light will destroy the darkness, and after this experience, I can see why. The beams moved as if they were a great sea. Once touched, you felt as if you had a good night's sleep and woke up under a warm blanket on a chilly day. That is a wonderful feeling.
Like a flash, the light waves then vanished, as if they had never been there, and Tyan and Len felt as if a part of themselves vanished as well. And so did the third Jonaya, for once he appeared, the light waves around him vanished.
A feeling of parting, a feeling of loss. That is what I felt when the waves of light vanished and I found myself in the very room I wished to enter. As I looked around, I saw the two other age journeyers. And still, they looked as if they were from Dunny, for they wore shirts bearing the symbol of the hand, or the Yisha shirt, as it is sometimes called. Greetings, my name's Ken.
Ken bowed as a sign of greetings and respect. Tyan and Len did the same.
Greetings, I am Tyan.
And I am Len.
It's nice to meet you both.
You're the third burdened, are you not?
Yes. How did you know?
Three symbols in front of a throne of an ancient race. My symbol says courage.
Mine, wisdom.
And yours says?
Friendship. You know, I think before we continue, we should tell each other what we each know.
And so they did. Tyan, Len, and Ken shared their knowledge and found that each held a piece of the puzzle. The one thing they all had in common was that they all had the mysterious keys.
This room also seems to be the one thing we all have in common. But this room isn't like the other instances. It's got three doors and a lot more of these strange symbols.
But like the symbols, I can only read parts of it.
Yes, it seems that we can read all of some texts and only parts of other texts. I wonder why that is.
Well, it could be because we each are only meant to see some things.
Yes, that's one idea. Yet I think it could be also that only when the three of us are gathered can we read and learn of the past.
Yeah, No, this could have been their way of guarding their knowledge.
True.
Is it me? Or do the three doors not have keyholes?
No, you're right. They don't.
How strange.
So, then if we can't use the keys to open them, how are we to proceed?
Well, maybe we aren't meant to.
What?
He may be right.
Explain.
I can't.
Why not?
Because he doesn't know.
It's more of a feeling, really.
Don't you think it's strange that we all have had moments where we just felt certain things?
Come to think of it, yeah, and that is strange.
It reminds me of the feeling I had when I first felt the call to Denis.
Come to think of it, yes, this is kind of similar.
A room that is a combination of three time periods, and it lies three doors that hide something. But what do they hide? What lies beneath those doors? A power of great good, or a force of great evil? I don't know. But whatever lies beyond them, I will face it, for that is the way of an age journeyer. He is not to run or hide. He is to be strong and use his courage, for courage is the burden of fire.
On these doors lies a mystery of which I can only read a part, but I feel a sense of wisdom, for I know what to do. I shall wait and be patient. This is the way of an age journeyer, for the wisdom is the burden of common light.
Three doors that hold a mysterious text that holds the key, yet only a part of which I can read. What are we to do? What is the next step? And what is the key? An age journeyer must ask these questions, for to ask is to learn. Friendship is the burden of cooling water.
Those words above the door. See if we can fit the pieces together.
Well, I see that they're in the order of your symbol, then mine, and then Ken's. So let's read them that way.
Agreed.
Beyond the door lies the hidden truth long forgotten, a power that must be returned. For you have walked through the temple of ages and have seen the histories long forgotten.
These histories hold the many lessons learned by the ones known to outsiders as the mystics. To travel these three forgotten roads is to learn of the past and to restore the future. Yet, if you take this burden, you will carry a weight three times as heavy as you yourself.
So learn. Take courage and wisdom, and learn also of the true bond of friendship, for this path will tear friendships apart. It will test the limits of your strength.
But if you hold your course and remember the lessons you've learned, your road will be as smooth as calm water. But if you do not take and learn from the lessons that will be shown,
your journey will be as if you were walking down a path covered in rocks. It will be slow, and you shall lose much. So be warned, journeyers, of the burdens.
For while this journey is one of courage, wisdom, and friendship, it is also one of temptation, pain, and greed. These three powers can easily take you if you are not prepared for what awaits beyond.
So now we know what lies beyond these doors.
But are we up to it?
That is something we must think on.
Hello again. This is Moog for the Cavern Today. Remember when you were a kid and you just found out something really, really exciting? For example, suppose that your favorite comic book had just issued a special edition, full-color, double-thick extravaganza with five complete stories, a fold-out poster, and a special fan club entry form that was available only to buyers of the special issue. Now that is huge. You'd go running home to your mom and would blurt out all the glorious details, and your mom's reply would always be, "That's nice, dear." Ah! Ah! She just didn't get it, and you knew that you could never make her understand. But still, you had to ask. So, can I buy it? We'll see. And you knew what that meant. You're never going to see that comic book. Well, it's funny how things aren't much different when you grow up. The characters change, but the story's pretty much the same. Exciting stuff happens, and when you try your best to make it sound important to your friends, you find that it's hard to even make it sound interesting. Now realize that my wife has never understood the appeal of Myst. Hey, honey, wow, this is cool. I have the chance to be a reporter on a Myst fan podcast. That's nice, dear. Well, I'll be working with other staff members from all around the world. That's nice, dear. Well, things are not going well. They have an annual gathering called Mysterium, and this year it's in Spokane, Washington. I'll get to meet some of my CCN friends, and we may even visit with the people at Cyan. Can I go? We'll see. You get the idea. Well, plans are that I will be coming to Mysterium, and I hope to meet some of you there. But it only goes to show what a lot of us have noticed about the frustrations of being a Myst fan, or really a fan of any kind of hobby. Myst, amazing as it is, just isn't universally popular. So you may find yourself balancing your own euphoria against the complete apathy of your nearest and dearest. You find yourself wishing that they could feel the same excitement that you do, or, failing that, at least they can understand that you're excited about it and appreciate your hobby for that fact alone. And that's where I am at the moment. I'm having an amazing time with Uru and with the cavern today. I've explained it all to my family at sufficient length so they know what I'm doing, even though they've heard very little of our actual podcasts. And they're very accepting of what I do. It just hasn't cost any money yet to speak of, with the exception of the games themselves. And there's the kicker. So far, Myst has been pretty economical for us. But throw in a weekend trip to Spokane, airfare, lodging, and so forth, and the story changes considerably. And if Uru Live comes back, and there's a monthly subscription, that may take some convincing. Oh well. So this one's dedicated to all of you out there who are carrying the Myst torch. Maybe single-handedly, maybe against all the odds. Hang in there. For the Cavern today, this is Mowag signing off.
Well, this is the end of another podcast. It's been great fun to make, and everyone here is very excited about the announcement of Live and the fact that beta testing has started or will be starting soon. This is Anthony signing off and wishing everyone a fun time in the cavern.
May the pinnacles rise up to meet you. May the glowworks be always at your back. May the sunshine reflect on every Yisha page you do not see. And may the rain fall on your Relto, only when you desire rain. And until we meet again, may you be blessed with nigh good fortune wherever you settle. Shura Mishiem.